Shavua Tov, today's daf Masechet Kedushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Gimel. We're holding at the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis. And let's go over the case again. The quick case over here was that somebody had given a little mat that was made out of some junk hadassim branches, which wasn't worth a shavu pruta. He gives it to a woman to be mekadesh her, and people yell at him, "Hey, well, you can't be mekadesh with this, ain't worth anything." So he says, "Aha, but you don't know what I have inside of it. There's like four dinner inside of it, a diamond ring, whatever, but some very valuable inside of it." So what happens over there? She doesn't say anything. So Omar Rava, so Rava said, if she doesn't say anything after she'd already taken the thing that was given to her, and at that point when it was given to her, it wouldn't be a kedusha. So if she doesn't say anything, the call is that koshti kuta de la achar matan ma'ot laftum. Being quiet about something, that's not considered to be saying yes. And I'll prove it to you. This is where we got up to, was the words mino aminolos. Rava says, the six lines up, mino aminolos. I'll prove to you that shti kuta de la achar matan ma'ot is not meaningful. Because here was the case. Tanya. Omar la kinsi shtela zu bepikadon. Somebody gives a woman a sela, and he says, "I'd like you to hold this for me and keep an eye on it that it shouldn't be stolen," and so on. And she takes it. And then he says to her, "You know what? How about if you actually become my wife with this sela?" Scotchy Libo. So if he said this as he's giving it to her, and she took it on those, but that understanding, then she would be Mikudesha. But if he says it to her after she already accepted it as the Pikadon, meaning that she was supposed to take care of it, then she's not Mekudesh. Now, the question is, what is the circumstance? So if it was La'achar Matan Mo'ot, so if she wants to be Mekudesh, it's not clear what that means, wants to be. Let's assume she said yes, right? So then she would be Mekudesh. But if she doesn't want to be, then she's not Mekudesh. Now, what Rava needs to prove to us, of course, is that when it says she doesn't want to be, it doesn't mean she said, "I don't want to be Mekudesh." It's a little bit obvious, isn't it? But it's got to be talking about that the lo ratzta means that she didn't say anything, which is the shtikus. And I'll prove it to you technically. So think for a moment. What do you think the word ratzta, she wants to be Mekudesh, and what do the words, quote, lo ratzta, unquote, what do they mean? Do you think it means literally that ratzta means she says yes, and lo ratzta means that she says lo? I don't want to be Mekudesh. So what, in the first part of the Braita, where it was Bishat Matan Ma'ot, she would be Mekudesh, even if she said no? That's ridiculous, right? Of course she's not Mekudesh if she said no. So Michlal Dereisha, how do you understand it? That Ki Amra Lo Nami Avi Kedushin? How could a Kedushin possibly be if she says no? I mean, any idiot knows that. Am I? She said, "No, I don't want to be Mekudeshet." So then the only way to understand that word, Ratzta or Lo Ratzta, is that Ratzta means that she gives her consent. So she says, yes, Beferish. And Lo Ratzta means she doesn't give her consent. Doesn't mean she said no, it just means she doesn't say anything. So it was the Ishtika Mishtika, right? There's no other way to understand it. And this Brite is saying that if after the guy proposes to her, following giving her the money under other pretenses, that it was supposed to be a pikadon that she was going to take care of for him, so then it's saying beferish, it doesn't help. She has to say beferish that I want to, and not simply be shoteket. Well, now that Naftali is here, I think I can even make a bracha. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh Bidvaro. Not every day that I get to hear an amen from Naftali, but I ain't hearing nothing. Well, he's probably there, just muted. We'll hope for the best. Okay. So therefore, I prove that you see from here, Shema Amina, this is what I'm telling you. Shema Amina, Shtika de la Acher Matan Ma'ot, Af Kluma. So Kashubabu Pum Nahar, they didn't actually think that this was a very good proof in Pum Nahara. And they would say over that this doesn't really make sense because Ravuna Bered and Rav Yehoshua pointed out that the two cases are not the same. The case that Rav is trying to prove was a case where he gave her, remember, this cheapo mat, And he says that hidden inside that mat was a diamond ring. You know, so then Rav is saying, well, if she didn't say, I want to be Mekudeshes, so she didn't give consent beferish, so then she is not considered to be Mekudeshes. He's trying to prove it from this case, where the original giving of the coin was in order for her to take care of the coin, right? So they pointed out it's not the same at all, because in the case where she was given the Selah as Shmira, supposed to take care of it for him. So the reason why over there, she is considered to be Mekudeshet, even though she was quiet. And you would think that, look, you know, if she thinks that this is outrageous, so let her throw it back in his face. Like, what? Why is she holding on to it as if it's okay with her that he's actually thinks he's going to be Mekudesh? I'll tell you why. Because since he gave it to her, in order for her to keep an eye on it and to make sure that it's taken care of, she feels, look, I accepted to watch it. You know, what am I going to, if I'm going to take it now, I'm going to throw it at him, you know, to tell, show him what I think of his proposal. So then if anything happens to it, I'm going to be responsible. You know, I already took responsibility. I can't throw it at him. So over there, in that case, she figures, Ishatina lo mit, but if anything happens to those things, and it would be my responsibility, right? Now, the Gemara's lashon is mitpere if they break. Obviously, coins don't break, so some of the Rishonim take out the words mitpere. But the idea is clear. If anything happens to those coins, if in that case it was coins, so fine, if one of them rolls away and it falls into the gutter or something, I'm going to be responsible. So I'm not going to throw it at him. But Shuhin came over here, in the case of the Hadassim, the guy gave it to her for Kiddushin originally. It wasn't a kosher kedushin because of the fact that it wasn't worth the shavar pruta. Now he's saying it is worth the shavar pruta. So if she really changed her mind and she didn't like the shtick that he's playing around over here with hiding money inside, you know, she says, enough is enough. So she'd throw it at him, you know. So she should show somehow that, look, I don't want to hold on to this mat with you fantasizing that you've made me your wife. Get out of here. So she should throw it at him. Why did she just keep holding it like everything is fine? So So it's not the same at all. We don't understand why Rava is claiming that he can prove the kol shtikuta. This was the last gavi klal that we had. That kol shtikuta lebasar matan mos is not considered to be an assent to kedushin. Rava Chai says, on the contrary, I don't understand what you don't understand. Of course, I think Rav is 100% right. What are we talking about over here? We're talking about a woman who accepted something. So now you're giving me like all of this logic. Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about logical women that are taking into consideration all of the dinim, you know, well, since I took it, l'chatchila, as a pikadon, I can't throw it away, mashenkin over here. What are you talking about? Where is she going to get all of this from? Oh, to kula nashe dina gemiri, what? All of the women that you know have finished Baba Kama and Baba Basra, I'm like, this is what they're thinking. This is how their brain works. You know, people in general don't think this way. She figures, Okinami Savra, she figures if anything happens to them and he ends up losing money, I'm going to have to pay. So Mitrayavna Bakriyoteo, she doesn't realize that, well, she never agreed to watch it. So she figures it's going to be the same as if I mamish damage on. So, of course, the fact that she kept it does not prove that she was accepting his condition at all. So Rav Acha Barav wanted to know what the psak was on this. Is Rav right, or is actually Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua right? In other words, that this in this case, it's not the same as the case of the mat. It's not the same as the case of the money that she had accepted as a shomeret. So Ravina said to them, listen, I have to tell you that personally, I never heard this, not from Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua, and not from anybody who quoted him. So I really, personally, it doesn't hit me. But listen, I mean, you heard this directly from him, you know, and you have to really, I mean, he was from your Rabbonim. So aton de shmir kol, you should at least be a little bit makbit to be machmir, that to make sure that she gets a divorce. If she wants to marry anybody else, she should get a divorce based on just lechumra, based on his taina that she should have thrown away. So now there was this woman, and she used to go around selling these little ribbons. And a guy comes and he grabs a ribbon. It's amazing how contemporary this is. The guy comes, he grabs a ribbon from her, says, "Give that back." She says, "Well, if I give it back, will you be my wife?" She takes it and she didn't say anything, right? So the question is, was that like accepting it that she took it back? So Reb Nachman said, No. In this case, she can say, "Well, because I took it back. It was mine. The idiot stole it. Why wouldn't I take it back? What would make you think that I was interested in accepting conditional? I think it's a joke." So because of that, we don't have to even worry about this. It's no condition. "Wait a minute," says Rabbi Reb Nachman. "What about this b'risa?" A b'risa says, "A kitshabe gezel b'chamas b'gneva." Suppose a guy is mekadesh a woman by things that he stole. Right? So, or for that matter, shechotav sela miyada, he grabbed even the money straight out of her hand and he gives it back to her and says, "Arei mekudeshet li with this sela that I just take out of your hands." I mean, like, and the maisa, all of the cases over here are basically referring to being stolen from her, as is mashma from the Gemara, but this is something shouldn't speak out to Feirish. It doesn't matter. She would be mekudeshet. So you see, that if she accepts from him something that was even stolen from her, that it is kedushin. And you're claiming that we assume that when she accepts it, she said, "Well, of course I accept it. It's my own thing. I'm going to sit there and argue with them. Just give it back." Exactly. So you see that Reb Nachman's psak is wrong. Says Reb Nachman, "No, it's a completely different case over there. In that case, they had been talking to Klal that they were going to get married. Right?" And she had agreed. So they were basically engaged in modern terms. They were engaged. So then when he plays this little shtick, so it's just a cute way to get engaged. So she actually accepted it from him in this fashion, right? But if Stam, a guy comes over and steals something from him, she takes it back, well, why would I think that that's serious? And I'll prove to you that there's a tremendous difference between being in a state of being engaged. They're being engaged, that they basically had spoken it out and they had agreed they're going to get married, which is, you know, when people say we're engaged. So how do I know that it's different? Because take a look at this braita. It says, if a guy owes money to a woman, he says to her, "Kinsi sela zu shani chayev l'chi." So take this money, which I owe you anyway. Here it is. And then he says, and you know what? I mean, if you take the money already, why not be my wife? So he's got Shilibo. So if he said this at the time that he's giving the money, so that she took the money from him with that statement, so then if it was Bishad Matan Ma'ot, so then we would say like this. If she was Rotsta, and we're going to go and explain what Rotsta means. If it was Rotsta, she's Mekudeshes. If she wasn't Rotsta, she was not Mekudeshes. If he said that statement after he gave it to her, then even if she was Rotsta, since the money was given to her as her own, it was a repayment. So there's no way that here, this is similar to the case before, where he says you can keep the diamond ring that was hidden inside of the mat. I mean, there he gave her the diamond ring, but over here he didn't give her anything. And what was given to her was repayment of a loan, and that was already repaid. So it wouldn't help over here to say Rotsta, that would be, you know, useless. So therefore, when it says over here, Rotsta and Lo Rotsta, what does it mean? When it says that before she took it, it would be Rotsta would be Mekudesha. Do you think that Rotsta means she said, "Yes, I will be your wife," and Lo Rotsta means, "No, I will not be your wife"? And what would it then be? That if she would have not said anything, so then it would have been a kedushin. So then all you need to say is she's mekudeshet. I mean, why do you have to say if she said no, she's not? I mean, any 2-year-old knows that if she said no, she's not mekudeshet. So over here, what you're saying basically is, if she doesn't say anything, she says she's Mekudeshet. So it's fine. Then just say she's Mekudeshet. You don't have to teach me that if she refuses to be Mekudeshet, that she's not Mekudeshet. So then that doesn't make any sense. Or it should just say Mekudeshet. Stop. I mean, that's what it said before in that first brisa we were talking about, where she it rotsta and lo rotsta. So obviously she's not going to become Mekudeshet if she says no. Therefore, the way to understand rotsta and lo rotsta is that rotsta means she said beferish yes, and lo rotsta means that she is not agreeing. She didn't say anything. And it says over here that in this case, she would not be Mekudeshet. I understand. Didn't you just quote me a brisa? And you said this brisa proves I'm wrong. Didn't you just quote me a brisa that we said, let her say, yechola lebimar, in shakli, vididi shakli. So why is this? Obviously, here it's because of what I said. Of course she took it. Why wouldn't she take it? I'm going to sit here and say, no, don't give me back the money that you owe me. That's ridiculous. So now, how do you explain the fact that we just had a brisa that said that if somebody steals money from her, that's the opposite, that if she took it, she is Mekudeshet. So Velakasha Akta Kitcha Begezel Bechomas of Gneva, Oshakatav Selam Yada Bekitcha Mekudeshet, and you just say that proves that I was wrong? Well, this brisa proves that I'm right. So how do you explain that? You know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. I'm telling you, there's got to be a difference between the two cases. Otherwise, you've got a contradiction in a brisa, correct? Okay, so therefore, you see that clearly there's got to be another factor we're not taking into consideration. What's that? Whether they were engaged. That's the point. So the case in this brisa where we say the kedushin is good, that's because they had been discussing it before and they were basically engaged and agreed to get married. And therefore, this would be the marriage. Masha Ein Kein before, where we said that it's not a kosher kedushin. So then that's talking about where they didn't ever discuss it, or they didn't agree that they're engaged. So you see that if she doesn't say anything, and she takes something that is hers or was due to be paid to her, so then what you see is clearly that it depends on whether they were engaged or not. And that's all that I said. Fine. So now you understand the brisa? You have to understand it like me. But what happened was that after Rav Asi was nifter, the Rabbanan wanted to make sure that they were not going to end up forgetting all of the wonderful things that he had taught in his lifetime. So I say the main teachings of Rav Asi, everybody knew. But there's always like little things that he said to one person or two people and that nobody heard about. So they decided that they're going to make this meeting of all of his Talmidim, bring everyone together, and then everyone will say over things that had been told them personally, and that way they would share it with all of his Talmidim, and it wouldn't be forgotten, and they would make a compendium of all of Rav Asi's limud. So after he died, Eilu Rabbanan Linkutino L'Shmaitate, so they wanted to make a likut of all of the things that he had taught. Okay, so in the course of this meeting, there was a certain Talmud, his name was Rabbi Yaakov, and he said to them, well, I'll tell you what I was told. Rav Asi said, Omer Rav Mani, Kishem She'in Isha Niknet B'Pachot B'Shav Bruta, Kach in karka niknet b'pachot b'shava pruta. This din of a shava pruta, they assumed that what he was talking about was that we're talking about karka. You can never utilize less than a shava pruta for karka to buy it. And the Rabbanan said to him, but that's not true. It's a fair as a brayta. How could Rav Asi have said that? It says in a brayta, afa pisha inisha niknet b'pachot b'shava pruta, karka is niknet b'pachot b'shava pruta. Rabbi Yaakov explained to him, what do you think? That you can make a kinyan of kesef without a shava pruta? That's what you really think it means? It means that b'chalipin, which we already saw, pachot b'shava pruta doesn't mean the coin. There is no coin. Pachot b'shava pruta means in terms of shava pruta only, right? So you're giving something for a field. Okay, so if you want to give, you figure, okay, it's just symbolic, so I'm just making like a chalipin, so I would be able to use chalipin. And the din is, you could be kainim b'kli, the tanya. Kainim b'kli, afa pisha in b'shava pruta. That's true. But you certainly cannot use it b'teras kesef. That's all that Rav Asi was saying. And that's absolutely correct. The difference that the Bright is referring to is that by Chalipin, which is Lashon Shavar Pruta, we utilize that logic that Ein Isha Niknes Bepochus B'Shavar Pruta to disqualify the din of Chalipin. Remember, we had a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos there, whether it's because a woman psychologically is not Makne Nafshav Bepochus B'Shavar Pruta, because Chalipin by definition can't be Kesev, the way Tosfos learns, because it works Bepochus B'Shavar Pruta. But the bottom line is we use the same type of phraseology to clarify the differences we were talking about between Kesev and between Chalipin, which is done with Shavah Kesev. Remember, you can't even do Chalipin with Kesev. Anyway, there was another thing that somebody said over, and that was Hodi Yasri V'Kamri, that Hodi Amar V'Yiram Shmuel. Remember, we had before, we made a big deal about we said anybody who doesn't know all of the knaches, the little issues that come up in Gittin V'Kiddushin, should keep his fat mouth shut. Even though he may be a big rabbi, he should not say anything about this. So you know what Rav Asi said about this? He was quoting Rabbi Yochanan. You know what he said? It was like, whoa, shocking. Om Rav Asi, Om Rabbi Yochanan. These people, so these rabbis who have opinions about Gittin V'Kiddushin, and they don't know every last detail of the dinim, they're worse to the world than the Dor HaMabul is. Whoa. Shenemar, Asher Fereshin Pasuk. This was what Rabbi Yochanan had said, and that we heard from Rav Asi. So it says in Hosea, Alo v'chachesh v'ratzoach v'ganov v'na'ov paratzu v'damim v'damim nagov. It's not clear what all of these words mean, but we're going to explain them in a moment. So, alo v'chachesh, Rashi says, is one thing, that they were nishba b'sheker. So, alo is an Allah, is a shvua. V'chachesh, and it was a lie. V'ratzoach, they kill, and they steal, and they go na'of. So, okay, na'of is screwing around. I mean, any type of arayot. Paratzu. So how does this, where do we see this? That if the Dayan doesn't know what he's doing, my mashma, because take a look at the way Rav Yosef was a Baki Gadol in the Targumim. So Rav Yosef would explain it when he translated it, that the word paratzu is from a lashon of ufaratzta yama v'kedma and so on. In other words, paratzu means that they ended up having children, but that these children were na'afu. So that means molidim banim minishei chavrihan. They end up having children from their friends' wives. It doesn't mean that they went around committing adultery. It means that the dayanim had paskah that a get was a get when it wasn't a get, and then they went ahead and got married to somebody else, which means that those children are from somebody else's wife. So that, how do we see that it's worse than the Dor HaMabul? Because look at the next passage. Because of this, the entire earth is going to be completely destroyed. Anybody who is living on this earth is going to be wiped out. And here's the key. It's going to wipe out the oceans. By the Dor HaMabul, it didn't wipe out the oceans. By the Dor HaMabul, because take a look what it says about the Gezer of the Malchus, about the Mabul, Mikol Asher Bechor Avamet, only every life form on the earth went extinct. But Lo Dagim Shebayam, the Elohacha, Mashein came over here in Hosea when it's talking about Paratzu, it says Beferish, even the Dagim Shebayam. So you see that these people who don't know what they're doing in the Hilchos Kiddushin and Gittin, you see that they were gorem more damage to the planet than even the Dor HaMabul. But I mean, like, how does Rav Asi, or Rav Yochanan really, how does he know that just for that one thing that you would be gorem the destruction of the earth? Maybe it's a list of all of those things, which is a horrific breakdown in the totality of society. Swearing falsely, killing, stealing. I mean, it's not just that one thing. And you're saying just these people who don't know what they're doing, they are enough to destroy the world. How do you know that? Nah, that it can't mean all of them together. Because, look, it's true that we don't have a right from Pasuk Guf, but if you take a look in Yirmiyahu, it says the Mipnei Allah of La Haaretz. Now, right here, it listed Allah v'chachash. It listed as one of this, all of these things, right? And because of this, of La Haaretz. And here it says, for Allah alone of La Haaretz. So how do you explain that? If over here in Hoshea, it means only Allah together with Ritzicha and with all of the other things that are mentioned. So you see that each one of these alone is enough to be of La Haaretz. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is a different category. Maybe Allah is particularly Chomer. I mean, after all, it's part of the, I mean, it's the only thing that it says that Hashem lo yinakeh. You know, you use the Shem Hashem and the Shvah Sheker. Maybe that's a separate category. So maybe for Allah, you could actually conclude that you'll destroy the planet. But maybe all of these other things, which included the Paratzu, which is the remez here to our sugya of Lo Yelo Esek Behen, maybe they were a separate grouping. So, I mean, how do you know that it's not part of a set? You're claiming by itself. No, excuse me. The word Paratzu, which is the basis of this Targum of Rabbi Yosef, which is that they had children because of Yifritzu, means Lashon HaPiri of Arivia, so then it doesn't say Ufaratzu. It says Paratzu, which means that this exists on its own. If it was part of that set, then it would have to say Ufaratzu, right? So therefore, when it says that Alzdos, the Allah Haaretz, Te'avel Haaretz, and so on, so then it means this idea itself, the Paratzu, that was the Raya that Rav Asi was quoting from Rabbi Yochanan, that they're Koshin Le'olam, Midor HaMavo. Okay, then this means...
Could Rabbi just comment, please, on the obvious? Dagim are a simon of pure Viravian fertility, and here the Dagim die, and they don't die. Could Rabbi say a sense of Hesber, why Dagim are the...
What do you mean? You just said the reason, no?
I made the connection, but I...
No, you said the reason. Hoder Yasve v'ka'amre, thank you very much, beautiful. Hoder Yasve v'ka'amre, then they were saying over other things of Rav Asi. Hoditznan, ha'isha she'hevi'a chatasa u'meisa yovi'u yorshim olata. Okay, so over here we're talking about the Mishnah Itkinim, and it says over there, now, it's a little bit misleading to us because we're not learning Kinim, we don't understand why it's talking about this particular case. There's nothing unique about this case. In any case where we would have a chatas and eila that were going to be brought, this, it would be exactly the same halacha. So it happens to mention this case because obviously in Kinim, those were the cases that we were talking about. But wherever you have someone that was chayav a chatas and an eila, so he brings his chatas, which can't be brought after death, and therefore it would make no sense to discuss if he brought the eila. But over here, she brought the chatas. She dies. And meanwhile, her eila wasn't brought. So the halacha is that her yorshim should bring the eila that she was supposed to bring. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel said that this is dafka when she already had set aside a korban for her eila during her lifetime. But if she hadn't set it aside, so then nobody's responsible to bring it for her. So basically, what we're saying is the Eila, you can bring Liachar Misa. But obviously, the Chatas, you can't bring Liachar Misa, and that it's only where it was already Hegdesh. But if it wasn't Hegdesh, they don't have to make one Hegdesh because the there's no actual Shibud on the estate to bring it. So that's the main point over here. So what does that mean? Why is there no Shibud on the estate? So in other words, apparently what Shmuel holds is that even if a person has a chiyuv, which over here she has a chiyuv, but a chiyuv does not create a lien. If you want to create a lien, so then you have to actually make a contract that creates a lien. It's just not the fact that you owe that money. So apparently Shmuel holds that shibud alav diorais. So that even though there are places where we have shibudim, but it's not a given. So wherever there is a shibud, it's because the person individually, he took upon himself the shibud, or it's possible that the rabbanon were goyzer maybe shibud in the particular cases, but it's not a given. So this is where Rav Asi got involved. Rav Asi quoted Rav Yochanan as saying that this what Shmuel said is not true, and that af agav shelo yifrisha michayim, the yorshim do have to give her carbon for her, even though she never made it. So why is that? Apparently because there is a lien against the estate for her chiyuv. Amaka sava shibuda is the araita. Now, the question is, if this is what Rav Asi told us, how do we understand it? Because we know that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan had this machloket already in a completely different context. And remember, in the Gemara, the Amoraim don't play around by having a machlokas in two contexts where one is obvious from the other one. We always ask that. Why would they have to do it twice? Remember, we have a lot on our heads to remember. We have all of this was not written down. So we're supposed to remember things because we remember our learning. To sit and to burden us with a million cases is all very nice for AIs, but it's not very good for people. So why in the world would we have all of this extra stuff? Here's the famous and the most fundamental way of arguing about this. The Rav Shmuel, the Amar Tarvayu, on the one hand, we had Rav here, Shmuel, who said it together with Rav, that if a person takes a loan and he doesn't write a contract, so then the din is eina gova min hayoshim. He cannot collect that loan from the estate. And the lo min halakuchot. He can't collect it from land that had been bought by somebody else before this guy had died. You're not going to be able to get it now. Or Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, however, this is the same Rabbi Yochanan we just said argued on Shmuel, and he already argued on Shmuel here. Except this time he was joined with Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, Amar Tarvayu, even if you made the loan only as an oral loan, you definitely can be gove, bein min hayorshim, bein min halakuchot. You'd be able to collect, because this is a lien, and the guy is chayev to pay it. So obviously they're arguing exactly on this issue. Do we say that a lien is created by the actual debt, or is the shibuda only created by going out of your way to create that shibud? So why exactly was Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan arguing about the case of a carbon, which is basically a milval peh? There was no contract that was written. Says the Gemara, because obviously I need both of these cases. Let's say that we would only have known this question about taking a loan, an oral loan. So de'i etmar ba, if I only knew that, I would have said, well, in that case, Shmuel says that you do not collect from the estate. That's because there's nothing about this that would have created a loan that we would see that the Torah would say a man's property is mechuyev. It's not written in the Torah anywhere that this guy is supposed to be paid, that this guy has a loan. There's no such thing, right? So it's not written in the Torah. It's not a milva ktuva b'Torah. Mashenkin, in the case of a chiyev of a carbon, that is written in the pasuk. So anybody who reads the pasuk knows this woman who brought this chatas was mechuyevet to bring this carbon oil. So if that's the case, it's as if it's already written there. So there, maybe Shmuel would have agreed with Rabbi Yochanan. Ema model Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, that since it's a diraisa, it's the equivalent of being written. That's what I might have thought. So I need to know that it's not. And on the other hand, let's say we would only have known the case about the carbon. So I would have said, B'ha'akam Rabbi Yochanan, the milvak to v'betera kiktu v'bishtar adami. Why did Rabbi Yochanan say that over here there's a shibud? Well, of course, the Torah created the shibud. At the moment that she was mechuyevet min yoraisa to bring this carbon, all of her property already was waiting for that chiyev. And we could have forced her to bring that carbon. So in that case, it remains a chiyev on the estate. So maybe it would be Meida to Shmuel in that case. Obviously, I need to have both of these cases. See the full spectrum of the machlokes. Now, in terms of the halacha, Omer of Papa, Hilchata Milva Alpe Govem and Hayoshim, the Eno Govem and Halukucho. So the halacha is that actually the din would be that you collect it only from the actual heirs, but you cannot collect it from the Lukuchot. Why is this? Govem and Hayoshim, the reason you collect it from the heirs is because Midia Raisa, there is a Shibud, and therefore you're Chayiv because you created a Shibud. Masha Ein Kein, when it comes to this case where somebody had bought it over there, even though there's a Shibuta, as it says, but you cannot be Govim in Alekuchot because Letle Kala from the Rabbanan, remember, always protected the market, property market. And we would have a complete collapse of the real estate market if there would be no way to be insured against somebody coming years later, taking away something that you had purchased, because it turns out that that guy owed money. How am I supposed to know that? So I'm not going to buy anything from anybody if I don't know all of a sudden they're going to come and they're going to try to collect money from me. So because of that, the Rabbanan said, we cannot have, even if Shibud is the Oraita, we cannot have a situation where people are going to be afraid to buy property. And therefore, we protect you if you bought property unless you didn't do due diligence. Now, you cannot do due diligence unless there's a way to investigate it. The only way that you could possibly investigate it is if a contract existed. Once a contract exists, then there are people that know about those contracts. But if you engage in some type, you take a loan without a contract, how's that supposed to be known? There's no way I can protect myself. So therefore, we made a takana that you cannot collect from the lekuchas. Right? So this would mean that the halacha lemaisa actually could be the exact opposite, which is that, in fact, Noval Peh, even though this would be true, the Milval Peh would go from an Ayarshin, even though Shibuta is Lav the Araisa, because otherwise we destroy the loan market. And the reason that we're not gave him in Alakuchas is because Shibuta is Lav the Araisa. Okay, so this is a big question. How does the Gemara come out here? Because it would work in both directions, as Tosfos discusses. Okay, the next thing that we had in the Halakha Mishnah was finally finished, first part of the Mishnah, which is that, after all, Aisha Niknait, why does it focus on the Isha? Why does it focus on the Niknait instead of saying Mekudeshet? And then we went to, why do we need to count the number three? We know how to count. And then why does it use the masculine? Why doesn't it say the feminine? Why doesn't it say in the masculine, Shlesha, and why does it use the word drachim? It could have said dvarim, and how do we know that kesev? And do we know kesev from the fact that it's kicha kicha mistayefron, or do we know it from the fact that it says it's bitina tati li shazeh, and we learn it from all of those psukim, and then we went on to shtar, and the comparison of gittin to kedushin, and avaya to yitziah, and then we went on to discuss Bia, and do we learn that out from Ubala, or maybe we learn it out from Vihibu Ulat Baal, all of the exciting psukim we had in this week's Parsha, or do we have these, how much is it, what is the Kesev, is it the dinner, the Shava dinner, which led us to all kinds of questions, maybe three completely different approaches to why in the world we would come out with this dinner. Is it because we hold that all of Kesev is always in terms of the Diraisa would have to be Kesev Tsuri, or maybe it's really because of an understanding of what women generally accept as value, and therefore it would be different if she was Pashtayada Vikibla, or maybe it's because we made this incredible takana, we don't want women to be bubblegum machines in which you buy them for a penny, that's ridiculous. So we made a takana to undo the kiddushin in that event, And then we got into what the question of the pruta is and how much is a pruta, and is it in fact determined by one being 192nd part of the iser? Does the value of the iser sometimes change and the pruta remains the same? The machlok is about whether a pruta is the smallest coin or whether a pruta is a certain amount of silver value in whatever the local value would be, blah, 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 whatever. Anyway, we've gone through every single word. We finally got to the word Vekona at Atzma.
Okay. Time for a drink.
Sold to America. So now we're up to the words Vekona et Atzma beget uvmitata ba'al. So now, look, I mean, the get, we just had home a second about, so I know where that comes from. That comes from Vekatavla Sefer Kritud. Remarkably also, we just had this morning. Okay, but mitata ba'al, like, how do you know that a woman is kena herself with mitata ba'al? I mean, is that, like, why are we taking that for granted, that she would be kena herself? Now, it's very interesting how much we've come to take this for granted. Because, I mean, look, bishlama get, okay, v'katav la'sefer kritut, fine. But the mitata ba'al minolan, so, I mean, isn't that just logical, says the Gemara? I mean, she was only Asura because there was a husband. So when there is no husband, then she's not Asura. Says the Gemara, that's ridiculous. Of course, it's not logical. Because consider all of the people that she became Asura to because of the fact that they were married, right? So now she gets married, and now she's going to be Asura forever to her father-in-law. But her husband died, and she was only asura to her father-in-law because she was married to her husband. So if her husband is no longer there, she shouldn't be asura to her father-in-law. I mean, every single case of the arayas that came about through a marriage are clear proof to you that the fact that something was asura because of someone's life doesn't mean that it becomes mutter because someone is no longer alive. So what kind of crazy argument is that? You took it for granted because you're so used to it. But it isn't logical when you think about it. So why do you say it's a svara? V'harayot, the asalahu, so the husband causes these isurim, and when he dies, it makes absolutely no difference. Ooh, you're right. So how do we know? Ha! So I'll tell you. Doesn't it say that a yavama of a man who dies without children is not allowed to get married? Oh! So that implies that if he did have children, that she would be able to get married. So there you go. So it seems that the Torah is taking for granted that when someone dies, his wife can get married. Huh. No, that could also be a prejudice. Maybe the deal is like this. If the guy dies without any children, then she is asura to anyone, but at least there's one person she's muteret to, namely his brother. But in the case where he has children, she's asura to everybody, even to his brother. How do you know that she's necessarily muteret to everybody? I never thought of that one. Ah, I got a good one. The Torah says that an almona is asura to a kohen gadol, right? But, I mean, doesn't that make it clear that she's not asura to someone who's not a kohen gadol? There you go. So, hola kohen hetid or to any other individual, she would be muteret. No. Not necessarily. V'dilma l'kohen gadol b'lav, and the kulei ama ba'aseh. Look, it says in the pasuk, v'shilcha mibeito, v'yatzah v'ayta le'ish acher. So what does that say? That says that in order for a woman to go to be for another man, it needs to be in the condition where there was natan b'yada sefer kritut. Was there a sefer kritut that was ever put in her hand? No. So she was over on that mitzvah. So then that means that, and you're right, obviously, if we're talking about it being an iser lav, so then we're saying for other people, we certainly have taken off the chi of mis of the eshes ish. That's not our question. Our question is that there's two totally different issues over here. One of them is the fact that she has a cheskas iser. What happened to that cheskas iser? whatever that cheskas iser is, I mean, I understand you took off the fact that there would be a chiev misa because the husband is not here. But how do you know that she's muteret? It only says in the pasuk she's muteret if she got a get, and she didn't get a get. So then maybe this is still an iser aseh, right? So the kulei ama aseh, and even if you can't precisely define what that aseh is, but it would be the lowest level of an iser. Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, where would it come from, this aseh? If you're telling me that the death of a husband changes the situation, so either hanya mitata b'alts, then she should be completely muteret. And if it doesn't change it, so why isn't she asura with the iser of misa, the way she was when her husband was alive? Excuse me? That's logical to you. There's many places that we find this kind of thing. A status changes vis-a-vis certain elements of it. Here, for instance, okay, something was hegdish. Now, when it was hegdish and there was nothing wrong with it, then what was the din? I wasn't allowed to have even a pruta's worth of hanah. I would have to bring a carbon. I would be chayv me'ila, right? Okay, fine. So now when it becomes psulei hamukdashim, what happens now? So I'm not only at that point, while it was still okay, it didn't have a mum. So I certainly wasn't allowed to do giza v'aveda. I couldn't shear it if it was a sheep. I couldn't use it for work if it was a sharp. And I couldn't get any type of hanah. Now, I go ahead. Now it gets a mum. I buy it off of Hegdash. And what's the din? I do not have any iser of me'ila. Can I use it for shearing? No. Remains osur b'giza v'aveda. Can I use it right? So why can't that be the same thing over here? A situation changes, but there are different elements in that situation. So one aspect of that situation was that it was a chiyuv misa. Clearly that has changed because we're saying even to a kohen gadol, it's only a lav. So there's no chiyuv misa. But I don't understand how you say that all of the elements of iser have been removed. Not necessarily are all elements of iser removed. Now, I need for you to prove to me that the death of a husband is matir a woman. Ah, it says, pen yamut b'milchamav hishacher yikachena. Maybe he'll be killed in the war and another guy will marry her. How can another guy marry her if he didn't give her a get? So you see from here that somebody dies, another person can marry her. How do you know the other guy is just any guy? Maybe the other guy is the Yavam. So who's to say? We already understood that, of course, the Yavam would be allowed to marry. So Ema Man Acher Yavam. Amar Vashi. There's two things I have to say to that. First of all, the whole point of a Yavam is that he's not an Acher. Not the idea is that we're stressing the genetic similarity of the Yavam. It's absurd to call it an Ish Acher. So we would never refer to a Yavam as an Acher. But besides that, take a look in this week's Parsha, which of course would be the source of the Salah. Usnei'a ha'isha acharon ve'katav la sefer kritut. O ki yamuta isha acharon. Aha. Remember Rashi says, yeah, that's what he should do. After all, taking a woman like that into his home. But anyway, because it says what's a bar vatavar. But the bottom line is, it's comparing either or, right? So either we have the kasav la sefer kritut or kiyamut, which means that these are essentially the same. In which case, just like gerushin is matir completely, it's sharia v'gomeret af mitah. Sharia v'gomeret, QED. All right, wonderful. So this brings us to Hine El Yeshua Si Eftach V'lo Efchad, and I look forward, Be'ezus Hashem, with Bitachon, to seeing you tomorrow morning.